Arthur Vandenberg is one of the most important political figures in American history for whom there has never been a complete biography. So it was a story that needed to be told. And then he's from Grand Rapids. He grew up with us. He edited the local newspaper. He is a part of our lives in ways that we don't even realize, and that made it irresistible.
What were some of the intriguing pieces of his life that you were able to pull into this book just from having access to his connections here in Grand Rapids?
I wish I could claim there were some. We had some good interviews here in Grand Rapids with people who still remembered him, but actually his papers are at the University of Michigan in the Bentley Library, and that was the primary resource. And then it was meeting and talking with people in Washington and his daughter in Connecticut and others all over the country who really helped me round out the story.
World War II is a turning point in Arthur Vandenberg's worldview. What is it about World War II and what you know about the man and his political ideologies?
He had built his career and his, in fact, fervent belief in American, he would call it nationalism, but what it became was isolationism in the years after World War I and before World War II. And after World War II, it became apparent that the U.S. could no longer live in isolation. We were the dominant world power. Without us, the world might slip into chaos or another world war, and so we simply had to play a leadership role that we hadn't played before in the world.
So for you, when you see the world today, and we look at NATO, the United Nations, these are his creations in many ways. How has the world changed since then, and when we have a leader of this country today who calls into question some of these institutions that Senator Vandenberg brought to all of us and to the world stage?
Well, Senator Vandenberg was among those people in the post-war years who created what we think of as the world order, a combination of institutions and commitments and beliefs that have really given us, generally speaking, peace for 70 years. And that's now sort of up for debate. People have taken that for granted, and we're seeing a resurgence of some of that notion that America is better off on its own, that we can turn our back on some of those beliefs and commitments that have helped maintain a peaceful world for the most part.
Is there a theme that you've created in this book for the reader?
Well, we were talking earlier about St. Paul. Now, Arthur Vandenberg would tell you that he always wanted to write a biography of St. Paul because he too had a conversion. Now, his wasn't on the road to Damascus, but it was during the course of World War II with the attack on Pearl Harbor, with his nephew, we don't hear much about him, but General Hoyt Vandenberg, who was a student of modern warfare as an Air Force general in World War II and was telling Uncle Arthur about how the world had changed. And all of these things came into play for Arthur Vandenberg to say, no, I can no longer be an isolationist. I have to convert to a new way of thinking. And that capacity to change, I hope, is the theme that comes through in the book. And we often chide our leaders for being inconsistent. But what that really means is sometimes it means they're flexible in the right ways. They can adapt as circumstances change rather than adhering so strictly to a certain belief that they're blind to the needs of the present day or the future.
We're blessed to have the Hauenstein Center for Presidential Studies here and the number of talks and discussions that take place here. And oftentimes those discussions focus on leadership, integrity, and character. What is it that you see that were the cornerstones in Arthur Vandenberg's life when it comes to those personality traits?
I think building what is really a miraculous balance between compromise and principle, where you have a set of principles that you operate from, but that you recognize that in order to govern, we have to compromise. And he was able to combine those two in a rather remarkable way and pull a lot of the Congress and a lot of public opinion in our country along with him.
There's often debate over, is it the mother or the father who has the influence on a child and how they will turn out as leaders? Who was or who were the influences in Arthur Vandenberg's life?
I would say two things. His mother, a bigger influence than his father, although he and his father were close. His mother was a larger influence, but he was also, he was a hero worshiper, which means he was seeking mentors all along. And in a distant way, he worshiped Alexander Hamilton and really absorbed the spirit of the founding fathers in the way he looked at the United States and at the Constitution. And then in a more direct way, we just here in Grand Rapids unveiled a statue to William Alden Smith a few weeks ago. William Alden Smith owned the Grand Rapids Herald and was a Republican congressman and senator and very much a mentor to Senator Vandenberg. When Senator Vandenberg, when he went to the Senate in 1928, his mentor there was a senator from Idaho, very famous, named William Borah, who had been the leading isolationist of the 1920s. So these were people that Vandenberg learned from, watched, emulated to become who he was.
As you write this book and knowing the history, and as we see how our leaders work with each other today, what could today's leadership, what could our Congress, what can they all learn from the life of this great man who you've spent so much time studying?
Couple of things. One, that to really have durable change, to have legislation that's going to stick, you've got to have buy-in from people on both parties. Otherwise, it's only as good as that administration is in power. And we're seeing that every day with things being done by executive order rather than by legislation, because that bipartisan solution is so hard to find. And it means being willing to work across the aisle, to say that's not just something that would be nice. That's something that's essential to how we govern. I think that's the most important takeaway.
And for you, for the reader, and for those who you meet with in auditoriums and have discussions about the book, what is the takeaway? What do you really want people to focus on after they've read the book or while you're there discussing your findings?
I hope they realize this was a flesh and blood guy. He was a politician, but he also was a frustrated writer. He wrote short stories that were published in magazines when he was in his 20s, but he couldn't make a living that way. He had an affair that some people say both cost him his presidential aspirations and may have influenced his thinking, because she may have been an agent of the British Secret Service. These are intriguing side lights on a colorful life. He was friends with a lot of people you'd never imagine he was friends with, not only politically, but in the arts and culture. And that makes him a richer character than just a stick figure of a politician who changed his mind, important as that by itself is.
Does that help someone navigate politics to its fullest, to be engaged with so many groups?
I think it keeps us thinking more broadly. Today we struggle so much with a society where we can choose our own sources of information and we can choose our own particular clan or tribe that we associate with. And he recognized, both as a newspaper man and then as a politician, that you had to climb out of that comfort zone and interact with others to really get things done for the long term.
Do you find something within all this? Is there advice for people to climb out and to explore and expand and to not clamor under one tent?
I think it's to be yourself and to realize sometimes you've got to speak out. You've got to dissent from your party, even as you count yourself. And he was as thoroughgoing a Republican as there was. But sometimes he said, you know, my own party's going to fight me on this, but I think it's important to do, when it came to appropriations for the Marshall Plan or something like that.
How long did it take to write this book?
This is a little embarrassing. It took 26 years. I started in 1990.
It's thorough at this point.
Not as thorough as it was when it was an unpublishable 1,000 pages.
But you found joy in the process, I would imagine. How enjoyable was this for you?
It was delightful. I had a core of confidence that because it was an important story, eventually it would see the light of day. I didn't know it would be published by a wonderful publisher. I didn't know what form or shape it would take, but operating with that confidence sustained me. And then the research is like delving into a different world, into a different time. And I found that perpetually entertaining.
I just find the timing to be spot on with what we're experiencing in our political culture in this country right now.
It is almost shocking, because as I was finishing the book, I was thinking, this instantly feels like a relic of days gone by, because the political climate had changed so much. And then we turn around and discover that it's precisely the characteristics that Arthur Vandenberg championed that are really a lot of us think are most in demand today.
Author Hank Meyer, the book is Arthur Vandenberg, The Man in the Middle of the American Century. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Patrick. It's a pleasure.